Mayor Terry Renner. Hi, Terry. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Yourself?
I'm just fine. I'm busy. I'm staying up late watching the conventions. I couldn't stay. Eric, God bless Eric, he stayed up and watched almost all of Bill Clinton's speech last night. I am always a day behind, so I'll watch the full speech today. I saw Michelle Obama's speech yesterday, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah,
heck, even Donald
Trump. Actually, I didn't have a chance to see the Michelle Obama speech that was happening. These days, as mayor, I don't usually have the luxury of spending a lot of time.
Oh, stop your whining about being mayor and how much time it takes out of your day.
It's an empirical statement I've got. But anyway, no, I did see it yesterday because there was a lot of praise. Some of the people who are, even David Brooks and others, conservative political commentators, said it's probably one of the best convention speeches they've seen. It's about 14 and some minutes. It really isn't very long.
No.
But it's clearly emotional, and where she and in dealing with her kids, the concerns that they had, and as she and her husband were, constantly being trashed in public, how do you talk to your kids about this? And that is, and one of her famous lines, of course, was, "When they go low, we go high."
Right.
And stay high. And so anyway, yeah, I would recommend it. I mean, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with her or her husband, I would definitely recommend going on YouTube or whatever and getting
that. Yeah, you know what, though, Terry? I don't believe people who do, boy, and I'd love to hear from them, people who don't agree with President Obama, his policy, or anything he's done, I don't believe they'll watch that speech.
I think that's where we live.
You
know, on both sides of the aisle, or the many sides of the aisle, I think these days it's hardly just two. We have gotten to this point in this country. This is one of our problems. There are a core of people who, on any end, who if you don't agree with somebody, you absolutely have to vilify them. You've got to trash and crash and burn them. It's not a question of ideas. It's impugning people's integrity or patriotism or religion. It's really sad. And it's not just at the national level. We see it here very clearly, even right here in Bloomington. And there's just an inability to really just understand that human beings are different, and we all bring different things to the table. And that's really, I think, sad.
So as a political scientist, which you are at Illinois Wesleyan University, did you spend much time, did you get a chance to see either live or later on some of the speeches from the Republican
live,
convention?
Many pieces of critical points later on, mostly later on. I think that both parties have had unusual acrimonious conventions, let's put it that way. And by unusual and acrimonious in kind of the modern era, and it is, by that I mean, we used to have, if you didn't have a president running for renomination throughout most of American history, it was not unusual to have very rambunctious, divisive conventions. But since 1952, that was the last time you had anybody nominated, not on the first ballot. Everybody since 52 has been nominated in both parties on the first ballot. In 1952, of course, it was Adlai Stevenson of Bloomington here who was nominated for president by the Democrats on the third ballot. In the modern period, you have a situation where the momentum builds during primaries and caucus season, and usually by March you know who's going to be the nominee. It was unusual on both sides for us to go, until for the Democrats until June, for the Republicans until really May before it was clear. And obviously the divisions, people booing each other, that usually doesn't happen at party conventions. The last time the Republicans had one like this was 1964 with Goldwater and Rockefeller's people booing each other. The Democrats, probably this convention, I think, is closest to the Carter and Kennedy convention of 1980, where it was roughly the same margin, about 60-40 for the victor. And the liberal, the most liberal wing of the Democratic Party was, on the minority side. In 1980, it was Kennedy. And in this election, of course, it's Bernie Sanders. And that was still, it was a pretty a divisive convention. So I think those are the clearest parallels as far as the conventions. I don't know if that helps a little bit.
Well, and since you didn't see it, I thought this was a moment, because it is a historical moment with Hillary Clinton becoming the first presidential nominee from a major party. But Bernie Sanders calling for Clinton to be named the nominee through the procedure there, what do they call it? Just blow off the rules. Let's make her the nominee, basically, is what he was saying.
Oh, yes. Yeah, basically, essentially, you wanted to make it unanimous, and that's actually quite typical. That's what Hillary Clinton did when she lost to Barack Obama in 2008, and that was a very, very tight, pretty nasty race.
Yeah, it was nasty. I think a lot of people forget that.
Yeah, and over time, we do tend to forget that. The difference between the Obama and Clinton races is there really weren't any issue ideological differences. I think, you know, political scientists would call them moderate to liberal pragmatists.
Yeah.
They're certainly not the most liberal wing of their party. So there wasn't an ideological difference so much between Clinton and Obama as you see in this situation between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. But that's absolutely a typical thing to be done in both parties, especially in recent decades.
We're talking with political science professor Terry Renner, Illinois Wesleyan University. We'll have him put his mayor's cap on in a second. Did you get a chance to see a certainly more presidential looking than I've ever seen him? I don't think more presidential than anyone ever has ever seen him. Donald Trump's speech to the convention last week in Cleveland?
Yes. And I didn't. Again, that's something that I had to catch after the fact. And I think his advisors and others were probably happy that he stuck to the script.
Yeah.
He used a teleprompter. He didn't go off. And so I think that was you know, an important moment for him. He got a little bit of a bounce that the polls are showing, and that's not unusual to get a little bit of a bounce. Because generally speaking, during your party's convention week, you dominate the coverage, and you're in the spotlight. You deliver a speech that should be good, should be the speech of your life, and that's the case with either party. So, again, Donald Trump was down on average 4 or 5 points in most of the polls going into his convention. He was either even or up 1 or 2 points after the convention. We'll see what happens here after the Democratic convention. Essentially, the polls just before and around Labor Day tend to be, and after the dust is settled, tend to be the most accurate in terms of predicting what's liable to happen in November.
It'll be interesting to do. Did a poll come out a favorable, you know, they do these favorable ratings, and did one come out after the Republican convention? And if so, how did he do? Because the conventions do paint the candidate in such a positive light, you'd think the favorable numbers would have to go up.
Yeah, well, and virtually any poll is going to ask that question, and there literally have been dozens, even since last week's Republican convention, on the national level. And so, Donald Trump's favorables had been kind of stuck in the upper-mid 30% range, and that's also about his support was somewhere around 40. Hillary Clinton's favorables were stuck at around 40, and her vote was around up-mid 40s,
yeah.
And they're at least after the polls post-Republican convention show them to be about even, more showing Trump slightly ahead than Clinton slightly ahead.
All right. Let's talk briefly about Bill Clinton. We played a little bit of his speech here. I'll watch it all later today. From what I'm gathering, it wasn't his best speech ever, but it did the job of softening the rough edges of his wife, Hillary. Here's a question I have, though, because we've talked about the scenario. This is if Hillary were to win in November, that would make him the first gentleman. All right. So that would be a first there. We'd have a first gentleman for the first time. And it would be the first time, obviously, that a spouse becomes the first anything because who previously held the position of president. So what
right.
would his job, you know, the first lady, you know, Hillary Clinton, they ruffled some feathers here, made some waves when Bill put her in charge of health care, basically.
Mm-hmm. So essentially we don't know what would happen because, as you've noted, it's never occurred before. But we certainly do know that until the Monica Lewinsky scandal in 1998, Hillary and Bill Clinton worked very closely together. Again, regardless of whether you agree with their policies or not, they certainly, you know, worked very, very strongly together and were so-called, you know, a team, essentially. During the Monica Lewinsky scandal, there apparently was about a year where they barely even spoke to each other. At least this is what, you know, some of the presidential historians tell us. So they obviously had some really difficult times in their marriage. But I think one of the things that you saw at the Democratic convention that Bill Clinton was, and any other speeches were trying to make clear, is that whether you agree or would disagree with Hillary Clinton, she's tough as nails and she's steady. I think that's what they're trying to get across. and in fact, several have alluded to, you know, someone whose hands are on the nuclear codes. Do you want them to be impulsive? Obviously, this is a stab at Donald Trump. A president needs to be empathetic. Hillary, they're saying, is empathetic, as opposed to someone, you know, making fun of handicapped people.
Right.
So they're definitely getting some subtle and in some cases not so subtle digs in on Donald Trump. And so I think you're getting an idea of how the battle lines are going to be drawn and the kinds of ads that, well, we're probably not going to see many of them because we're not a swing state, but the swing states will be bombarded with these ads, you know, as we go to the fall.
Can Bill Clinton be a cabinet member?
Again, I don't see what, there's nothing constitutionally that would prevent someone from being a cabinet member. Who's related to the president, there is definitely some precedent for us. Most recently, John Kennedy appointed his brother, Robert Kennedy, to be Attorney General of the United States. The only thing that would have to happen, of course, is that the Senate would have to confirm them. Usually that's the last cabinet nominee who was not confirmed was John Tower in 1989. It's pretty rare that the Senate does not confirm who the president wants for a cabinet post, because those are his guys and gals, or in this case, you know, potentially her guys and gals, to help them. So the Senate, even generally, they may skewer him a little bit, but they generally give the president a lot of latitude in selecting the
cabinet. A couple of months ago, Hillary made the little offhand statement at a campaign stop asking about, you know, what Bill's position would be. And she said, you know, she said it's something to the effect of him revitalizing the economy, bringing jobs back. And that, you know, and that would have to be, if he were to become a cabinet member, he'd have to have Senate approval. But to become a czar, like let's just say an economics czar, they can put him in that position without...
Certainly a president can appoint people like that in terms of executing the laws without, you know, going to the Senate. I don't think the Senate confirmation is liable to be an issue with something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of who or what the structural role is, how you move around the boxes, Bill Clinton is going to have a very strong role in a Hillary Clinton presidency, as Hillary Clinton did in a Bill Clinton presidency. Again, if this happens, obviously we've got this thing called an election that's coming forward. We'll see, you know, who prevails. But definitely, I think that that's, that point should be really clear.
All right.
And the Clinton days, and you know, I think that what they're trying to suggest is polls do show us that people do believe that the economy did very well under Bill Clinton, and it's true. And the stock market more than doubled. Now, whether he bears all responsibility for it is, you know, another kind of question. But certainly the economy boomed. All kinds of things boomed. He left with a budget surplus in 2000. So I think that's what they're going to try to remind voters of as we move forward.
All right. Hey, I'm looking at the clock. We don't even have time to get into this. Let me say, a gentleman spoke a public comment Monday night at the city council meeting, went off on a story of Asians eating dandelions in the fields. And I'm like, where is this guy going? And basically he's talking about these, he refers to as houses of ill repute. He says there are several of them in town, and he believes the city's not doing anything. They closed one down, not because of prostitution or anything like that. It was code violations. Do we have a problem in Bloomington with this?
Not that I know of in terms of the evidence. This gentleman did contact me several times before the public comment on Monday evening, and I certainly did refer this to the police chief in code enforcement. There's a particular house. I think he maybe did use the term plural. When he had contacted me, there was a single place. We have no evidence that there was anything going on. The one thing that we have to always realize is that these things are very difficult to demonstrate and take a lot of time from police in terms of investigations. Now, that's not an excuse. It's just a reality. And if we have evidence, that can help us. But we can't go in and get a warrant, for example. People have a Fourth Amendment right to protection against unusual searches and seizures. And so we certainly couldn't go into the place without, you know, certainly not going to get a court order. No judge is going to issue that because of one allegation. So we certainly, our investigative unit knows this. The police know this. Code enforcement did go into the one place that we knew about, and there were definitely some code enforcement issues. Mm. So, yes, we're on top of this. We do know it. If anyone has any actual evidence, please contact us, and we will proceed.
But
again, we do get allegations, frankly, of things that are happening all the time. Some of them turn out to be true or have some merit, and some of them do not.
I've got an idea for a reality TV show, Undercover Mayor. How about that?
I think that's the problem, is you're never really undercover. Even when I want to go in just to pick up like a gallon of milk at Schnucks, I did that the other day, and I had three people stop me about medical issues.
Yeah, send somebody else. All right. Hey, good talking to you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks, Terry.
Take care.